Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
104.5 The Zone with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
This is the Midday 1-8
served up by Wendy's on 104.5 The Zone.
Second half of the show is here. Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Up with a $5 biggie bag. No PK today. He's back tomorrow. He's recovering from his morning colonoscopy, which went very well. He said it was seamless. Now, the prep was not.
Hope there was a seam in there.
There was. The prep was not, but he said everything else went just fine. We will hear from his... From his post-interview that he conducted. That's coming up a little bit later in the show. You just heard from Godfrey. Stephen Godfrey in studio with us. Joins us each Thursday, normally at 11. Nice enough to join us at noon today. Keith Bullock will join us in an hour, coming up at 1 o'clock. Godfrey, how are you, man?
I'm good. I'm very good. I'm disappointed Paul keeps ducking my segment.
I know.
I will talk Ivy League. I will talk Columbia football.
I think you should just shock him the next time he's in here with some detailed Columbia discussion.
No, I'm throwing down, Chief.
Yeah. Talk about Matthew Fox, the actor who played football at Columbia and never won a game.
Is that their big claim?
It's one of their big alums, yeah. He's older than Paul, though.
If he
like said he was like leaving school when Paul got there, I want to say.
Wait, hang on. Matthew Fox from Party of Five and Lost is older than Karski?
Apparently. That shocked me, too, when I first
heard. I don't know who I'm insulting there, to be totally honest.
Someone's insulted.
Very though. Confused right now. Yeah, if he ever does come in, I do have... I mean, there is a noticeable trend of influence with those schools and offensive play calling in college football. I'm not making this up. Look at Oklahoma State.
Matthew Fox, 53 years old. So Paul is right. He was about to leave school when Paul got
there.
3 years older than Paul.
How about that?
You can follow Godfrey on Twitter at 38Godfrey. And if you do already, you notice the tweet that he sent out post-game Vanderbilt LSU, where the LSU players were discussing the conditions of the visiting locker room that you overheard. It was quite the quote. And, I mean, it's truthful if you're around that facility. What was the reaction you received when you tweeted out the quote from the LSU player, unnamed, that said, hey, this is like...
I didn't see him, to be honest.
You just heard him.
Yes. So if you guys have been in that visiting locker room or visiting media area.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. If you've gone to a Vanderbilt game, you guys know that there's an end zone with an overhang and a tunnel, right? You go into the tunnel. It's both the visiting and home locker rooms. There's a very little, like small, I don't know what you call them, staging areas, tiny little rooms, maybe 8x10, right? Cinder block, old doors, and the door to the locker room is ventilated for obvious reasons. And I heard the person say that I was waiting to talk to Ed Orgeron in LSU, as were most of the media there, because LSU is the nationally ranked team, as you do. And that happened. Kid in a towel, the door keeps swinging open because LSU doesn't play at Vandy often. They don't know what they're doing, and they said what they said, which is buried on my tweet. You guys can retweet it so people know what we're talking about. I'm not going to attempt to dance around the FCC and give a PG version of it. But we heard several comments like that. And so I sat there and I said, well, I'm sitting in the media room, right? I didn't sneak into the locker room. I heard this and everyone else heard it. I'm going to tweet it. What happened was, if you remember, LSU had that big kerfluffle at Texas where they claimed that Texas turned the AC off in the visiting locker room. And then Texas leaked, I'm making finger quotes because I'm on radio, information to their media was showing somehow that they definitely had the AC on. So LSU was a little bit miffed because it's another visiting locker room thing. But I'll say this. I think there were, I think that there were people at Vanderbilt who were happy that I tweeted that. Honestly. To illustrate the state of things. Because I feel I come on this show once a week and Chad... It's his evil orange agenda. That's what someone, a friend of mine is a Vandy fan, told me that. It's the evil orange agenda.
I hear it all the time. What's funny is I think Andy Staples, someone said, well, now the national narrative is going to be this. And Andy had a great response. He said, I'll be sure to bring this up in our next national narrative meeting summit.
Oh, yeah. No, no, no.
When all of us riders get together and have our national narrative summit.
We get catering. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
We go to Birmingham, of course, and Saban's there, of course, right? So we go like 100 miles underground. You know, like you've seen the lair in Austin Powers, and then they just tell us to say.
So this is in his office then?
Well, I'm paid off.
In Tuscaloosa.
As you guys know, as a member of the media, I'm incredibly wealthy,
right.
And I don't have to worry about job security. Because I'm paid off.
Well, let's go a layer deeper with you said that there were some people at Vandy that appreciated your tweet, which is, I'm paraphrasing, but essentially said it was penitentiary-esque conditions in the visiting locker room area for LSU.
I think that there were people at Vanderbilt who were very appreciative, yes.
Appreciative because the idea is out there that the facilities are so bad that visiting teams are coming in and saying this. Or appreciative that they think that will actually help the case to get some renovations done.
I'm not. Look, man, I've spent a year before of my life doing investigative journalism for one story.
Yeah.
And that doesn't change anything. Talking about like the NCAA.
Yeah.
Me tweeting about the Vanderbilt locker room is not going to change anything. However, here's what I believe. I believe that there are people at Vanderbilt who are, for lack of a better term, just new blood. And I think there are people who understand Vanderbilt outside of Vanderbilt in the college industry, in college sports, in college football, and in coaching as well. Because when I go to the convention every year, I talk to other coaches, and they say, where do you live? Live in Nashville. Where in Nashville? Live in West Nashville by Vanderbilt. Man, what could you do with Vanderbilt? That's what I get from coaches all the time. Meaning, in other words, this is like one of those TLC shows or HGTV shows where it's like, oh, look, a distressed property. And this is not against Mason. This is not against Turner. This isn't even against the previous administration. The bottom line is, it's not about putting it together and winning the SEC East. Let's be real. It's about not being a viable product. And right now, I think they're failing to be a viable product. And there's a lot of people at Vanderbilt that need to wake up and realize what they're sitting on.
So the crowd issue, and this is like the evil orange agenda type thing that you hear. Anytime we bring this up on the show, and Paul says this too, it's not a story. It's not a story that fans take over Vanderbilt Stadium. And to an extent, I do agree with that. But I will say, though, that first game of the year with 95% Georgia fans, they're 90, whatever percentage, it was bad.
Yes.
Then you get another early game against LSU, and it's really bad again. That feels different. And it feels worse now in terms of opposing fans taking over the stadium. I don't know what the answer is to that, but it's pathetic at this point. If you're a Vanderbilt player, or coach, and looking up and having to deal with crowd noise at home when you have the ball,
so I went to college at Ole Miss, and so obviously I guess mathematically I've been to more games in my life at Vaught Hemingway than anywhere else. But I will say I've been to a lot of football games in a lot of places across the country. But I think the second most frequent place I've gone to is Vanderbilt for obvious reasons, and I do think it's different. I think this year is incredibly different. I saw K-State bring a good crowd. I've seen Auburn, the year that Vanderbilt won, when it was Gene Chizik and Scott Loeffler and BVG, it was a terrible effort. Vanderbilt was like 50-50 that day.
College Game Day was there that day. Was that the game?
No, game? That's the one after. The one you're thinking about, the one before when Bobby Johnson started 6-0. Yep. That's a great example, though, Chad, because that was a black and gold game. I was living in an apartment on West End, and I remember hearing the horn, because they just kept blowing the anchor down horn thing for like hours after the game, which was awesome. There are moments like that that show you small proof of concept. The James Franklin era shows you small proof of concept. And I could say nothing and ignore Vanderbilt like the rest of the nation. So if you're listening to this and you're a Vanderbilt fan, I'm not picking on you. I'm telling you, you need to be better, because I think I make this joke, I'll make it on the air. You want my media bias? My media bias is that Vanderbilt is at least 10-2 every year, because then I would be able to go down the street and cover a top 10 program and not have to travel. I got kids. That is the truth.
The only eyebrow raised for me is not really the crowd. It's whenever I saw that LSU's band was performing pregame on the field.
You know, I think they worked that out.
That was weird. Like, I never see that, a visiting team do that.
I mean, I've heard of it before where they have bands come together and do things,
and there was a joint performance.
Right, and you know. I think bands travel X amount of away games, and sometimes conferences have agreements. And here's what's weird to me, and I've got the picture on my phone. I didn't tweet it. I'm a big anti-crowd photo journalist. The dumbest thing is when someone goes to today's view from the office and they tweet the press box, congratulations, you have a job. The second thing that annoys me is when they go, A lot of empty seats here. Da 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 da. Here's the deal. Economic reality of sporting events has changed dramatically in our lifetime, and I don't think you can measure the quality of a franchise, a school, a program, what have you, by when the people are getting in their seats anymore. There's too many extraneous circumstances. We live in the HD 4K TV era. And the bottom line is, I have my favorite sports teams. I'd probably rather sit at home too. You know, with the exception of the Nashville Predators. So shout out to them because they make me want to go to that game. All right. I took a photo of, and Chad and I we were talking in the break, I think it was 14-7, okay? Vanderbilt very much in this game still because they had such a great opening drive. I think they did a lot
They scored like that.
They did a lot with play action. There were some shifts.
Nice run.
There was some stuff where they got LSU out of position, and LSU's, we're going to talk about LSU in a second, that's their Achilles heel so far. It's the only thing they've shown weakness of so far is they get a little bit out of position this year on defense. Now, they were injured, whatever. Bottom line is Vanderbilt had shown life right out of the gate. I look down. I see these players trying to pump each other up, and not the visiting section, not the GA section, not the grassy knoll area. Behind their bench are a swath of purple and people screaming Tiger Bait. So if those are your tickets, I need an explanation. I need to know. Now, I know people buy season tickets because of the two games a year. Bama fans do that when Bama comes here, and I understand. That's not that. That are supposed to be diehard Commodores, right? Thick and thin. I'm going to be there. And if you're going to sell your tickets for that game, are you going to go to Northern Illinois this week? What's the point?
Well, the season, yeah, you're right. I mean, that would be the game. The first two home games would be the games you want to watch.
If you coughed your tickets up for Georgia and LSU, what are you waiting for?
Tennessee.
Mizzou? I mean,
that every other year, Tennessee. Or you just buy your season tickets cheap and sell every single one of them and make a boatload of money with all the visiting fans.
In a related note, I'll be hosting a Vanderbilt tailgate for the Missouri game with Two Rivers Ford. Last year, too.
Good luck, Chad.
For all you Vandy fans that say that I hate you, I show up. I don't wear black and gold, but I host a tailgate.
For all the Vandy fans that hate you, they can now receive you.
Yes, yes. I'll have a coronation that day.
Anchor down.
The Wake Up Zone, midday 180, 3HL, and now the Big Six, non-stop sports talk, every weekday from 6 a.m. till 7 p.m., 104.5 The Zone.
Day 180 served up by Wendy's, home of the $5 Biggie Bag. Godfrey in studio with us, hitting some college football headlines. We discussed Vandy. Now Tennessee.
Tennessee is a difficult one to exactly put your finger on all the badness that's happening with this team.
Yes.
Certainly the current coaching staff is to blame. Absolutely. Right. The quarterback is to blame. You've got your best player dropping a pass. It kicks up into the air. And it's an interception where it should have been 7-7 at that point in the game, and they completely go downhill from there. It's a complex situation. Is there a simple answer to what Tennessee needs to do and what Jeremy Pruitt needs to do moving forward? Because clearly this year is lost.
Yeah, it is. It is. And no, there's not a simple solution at the end of September. If you're looking for wholesale solutions to anything in your program at the end of September, something has gone horribly wrong, which it has. So no, you know, these ships, as programs go, are really, really hard to make dramatic turns on. That was a metaphor given to me by a coach. It's just that you don't have prep time when you go week to week starting in September to do something monumental. And that can be cultural, it can be psychological, or it could just be installing a new whatever. People, I think, really would be shocked if they saw the minute-by-minute on a Monday through Saturday when you get into the season. There's not a lot of deviation. I know we talk a lot about this, and we talk a lot about strategy, but a lot of that, what we think of the media, is born out of the NFL, where you're in meetings all day, film study practice, where literally you're installing and correcting, you're making wholesale changes, plus your playbook is a lot bigger, right? It's not like that in college. Now, you may play an option team one week, or you may have a bye and you change your schedule, but if you're Tennessee, you are what you are. And I know that's generic, but I can't sit here and say, well, they need to do this or switch this quarterback, whatever. No, you can't.
Well, and I think you can explain away some of the defensive problems, and they have gotten better on defense. They're much better against the run now, but you lose your best defensive lineman. You've got your best cornerback out until this game, and he was shaky coming back in this game. You're missing Daniel Batuli. You're playing a lot of young guys on defense. So you can, as a coaching staff, say, okay, this is where it's going to get better. You're playing 16 true freshmen out of a class of 19
right.
that came in. Offensively, though, is where there's just no real explanation for Jarrett Garantano looking this much worse. The offensive line, they're playing a bunch of young guys. They're improved. The offensive line has not been a big issue for Tennessee this year. They've run the ball better.
Yes.
They've protected better. You've got good receivers on the outside and a quarterback that can't get them the ball. That, to me, is the big mystery, is Jim Chaney and his
yes.
lack of impact on this offense. I get that it's four games and maybe things could start to click a little bit better as the year goes on, but that's where, if you're a Tennessee fan, you got to throw your hands up and say, what the hell is going on?
So if you're Jeremy Pruitt, why did you hire Jim Chaney?
To be a no-nonsense,
okay.
has won in the league before, had good offenses, been a lot of different places, and can groom a quarterback. That's the thinking behind it, right?
Right.
Has had good success with finding a quarterback and saying, okay, this is what this guy can do.
And you ran your other OC off to Western Kentucky.
Right.
Essentially pocketed him
yep.
because Western Kentucky owed you a favor.
And it feels like Jim Chaney has no faith in Garantano. I'm not sure he ever did.
Okay.
Based on play calling and the way these games have gone.
So my
he's asking him now to throw screen passes that he can't throw, apparently, because every pass is about 5 yards away. And the guy can't complete those, or he's throwing them 95 miles per hour.
My question is, if Jim Chaney's effect looks so much different than what we expected, so who's the author of that problem? Because what I don't... so
it's ultimately Jeremy Pruitt's the author of yes, everything.
Yes, yes. That's what I'm getting at. So what I try and do is... So Matt Canada, the OC that was at LSU, had a real acrimonious departure there, right? There was a lot of burying... A lot of bad talk about who was to blame there when LSU lost to Troy, and they were able to put that on Ed Orgeron for a little while. Well, here's the deal. Matt Canada wasn't hired by anybody this year, okay? He wasn't hired as the interim head coach at Maryland, and he's got a terrible we now know sort of effectively in the industry, he has a very bad reputation because he's obviously very combative with his staffs. I don't buy into comparative analytics week to week with football teams. In other words, if you beat so-and-so last week, you should beat so-and-so this week. That's not how college football works. I buy heavily into comparative analytics when you're talking about coordinator-head coach relationships. So what I mean by this is if you're always establishing a trend. Are you good to work with and are you immediately effective or are you problematic? And one of the things that I've talked about on this show a lot is the rise of the executive head coach, the CEO. My strong guess is that Jeremy Pruitt does not know how to be a CEO relative to his offense, because you know what Jim Chaney is in the SEC. Jim Chaney's got a long career behind him in the SEC. Does this look like Jim Chaney to you?
No. And it doesn't. And again, that's where it's tough to know what percentage is Jim Chaney or Jeremy Pruitt
right.
meddling and what percentage is Jarrett Garantano. It's not working, whatever it is. And I think that's the ultimate question. Look, I don't think Philip Fulmer's going to fire Jeremy Pruitt. I think he's going to get a third year unless there's something off the field that goes along with a 2-10 record
yeah.
or something like that. But
are you know the saying?
Danny, is he capable? This is the biggest question I think I have with Jeremy Pruitt.
Okay.
Is he capable of learning and adjusting? I think there's some evidence that he's done a little bit of that. And whatever's going on offensively, there's evidence to suggest that he's not learning and applying that on the job, because that's where Tennessee was. They hired a guy, they had to learn on the job.
It's but they knew that this coach. Was your, they knew this was the
yes.
quarterback. They knew
oh,
this was the quarterback that they were pairing Jim Chaney with.
That's what I don't understand.
This is my issue. Something here is not working. Now, could it be a Chaney issue? It absolutely could be. I'm not putting it squarely 110% on Pruitt, because this is a lot of supposition here in the segment.
Well, by the way, now they've got Juwan Jennings taking snaps in practice.
Okay. That I'm sure would solve a problem.
Yeah. I mean, but that's where they are now.
What are we doing,
they've got
guys?
Him taking snaps at the end of practice, and now that they've completely opened it up.
So how is that instilling faith in your starter, and how is that?
Well, he's not. I don't think he's the starter anymore.
But I
think what they're trying to do now is they're basically saying he's not going to be back either way. He'll be a grad transfer to UConn or UMass or somewhere else, and then it's going to be, you hope Harrison Bailey signs, and then Maurer, probably Shrout, or one of the two will leave, and you've got the transfer from Maryland.
Chad, you just took a very long view of sort of path there.
But honestly, that's the only way to look at Tennessee right now, because the short view is so bad.
Would you trust?
Right? I mean, there's no good good angle of the short view of this season, you have to take a long
view. Chad, do you trust any of the things that you just talked about, all of which are heavily reliant on player development, to actually occur with these people in power?
I think there's some evidence to suggest defensively they're doing a good job of player development.
They're
some guys.
Better on defense than I thought, but to be this...
I don't know about player development yet with this staff, because Jim Chaney's been here one offseason, and we're talking about one guy who got worse, and that's the quarterback. Granted, the most important position.
Yes.
But let me put it this way. I don't think there's good evidence to suggest that will happen in a good way. I also can't completely write it off as they can't develop anyone, because I do see an offensive line that's improved. I see guys in the offensive line who came back and improved. I see freshmen playing and contributing, and to have that many first-year starters, they're not awful on the offensive line. Basically, the best thing you say about the offense right now. I think Ty Chandler's about the same. Hasn't really gotten a ton better.
But what about Florida should not have been that effective on defense?
No.
You know, I was about to give you the benefit of the doubt and give Pruitt and everybody the benefit of the doubt and say, hey, look, we don't have a lot of data points here, right? We've talked about week one being a throw-it-out situation where you had a new offensive coordinator. They were clearly unprepared and undeveloped on defense, but that's a work in progress, and you knew that going into the season.
BYU game is probably their best game of the year so far.
What is BYU? We talked about this, I think, last week, where, hey, maybe if you do have your best player on the field on defense, especially in the secondary, maybe you change that play that sets up the field goal. It's a momentum swing, and there's a psychology issue on that team very clearly, visibly on television, that they were waiting to lose. We've talked about that as well, right? The Florida game is a team that is worse than I actually thought, and that's the same team that lost to Georgia State. I'm going to be honest with you, because that Florida team, not that good against Kentucky. Even losing the quarterback, that wasn't the issue there. That defense is suspect, okay? This live and die by the blitz thing with Grantham, I thought for sure Chaney, especially, knowing him as well as he does in recent years at Georgia, would be able to expose something there, and it just didn't happen at all.
One thing we do know, though, Pruitt was sold as being a ball coach.
Yep.
We have not seen that. I have not seen that.
What does that mean?
Saw that twice last
year.
Well,
it means there's more substance on the field than what Butch Jones was giving in the speeches and all the cliche responses he would do at a podium. That's what that means.
So far through...
He's the anti-Butch Jones. That's how he was sold.
Through 16 games. I have
not seen that.
Through 16 games, we've seen it twice. That's not a good hit rate.
This whole ball coach thing is hilarious to me, because the guys that you think are these slick executives, James Franklin, Brian Kelly, Butch Jones, they know ball. What they're doing is they're mismanaging their public-facing persona. They're not going in and giving executive development speeches to their kids.
Well, but now in the last, 4 weeks, we've had a Titanic reference, and now Pruitt's saying his roster is 100% better than it was last year.
Oh, now he's just scared. You know what? Pruitt is facing the double-edged sword of being a media isolationist. And when things are bad and you haven't put any equity in with the media, and I'm not saying you have to come kiss our ring, but you guys know as well as I do, you have to maintain open channels to communicate the good and the bad.
Sure.
And what this guy thought he was going to do was hunker down in some Afghan bunker and just be like, hey, you know what? Nope. I'm not going to use their names.
Right.
I'm not going to talk to the media. We're concentrating on getting better. This is about football. Well, guess what? When you suck at football after that, we tend to not want to communicate with you that much more.
James, first up for Godfrey today. What's up, James?
Hey, not much. Tell me something, guys. What's that wet stuff falling from the sky?
Don't know.
I don't know, man. Hey, thrilled to see it, though. I'll tell you that.
I just laid sod in my backyard, so I'm happy it's there.
But before I give my comment, I want to give props. You guys get me through every day that ends in Y, and I appreciate it. I've got 6 presets on my old pickup truck, and all of them are set to 104.5, so there you are.
James, thank you so much for that. Appreciate you.
No problem. No, I'm 55 years old. 49 years ago at the age of 6, my father took me to my first trip to Neyland Stadium, and I've been Big Orange base ever since. The thing that gets me as a fan is I'm only concerned about the product and its performance. I only care about what I see on Saturday between the sidelines. I'm not that interested in what goes on in the locker room, who the leader is, what the training regime is, all of that other stuff I don't see. And it insults my intelligence when Coach Pruitt comes out and says that he's 100% better this year than last year. It makes me wonder about his. In my mind, it sort of parallels the shenanigans that went on down in Florida under Jim McElwain. But I just want to, as a Big Orange fan for life, I just would like for don't try to sell me that. Don't try to, you know, pump me up. I'm all about the optics, wins and losses, period. And I'll hang up and listen to y'all. Oh, yep. By the way, y'all are spot on about his approach to these interviews. I mean, Godfrey, if I may be so bold, that Afghan bunker is dead on. But y'all take care. I hope y'all have a blessed day.
All right. Thank you, James. Thank you for Bye-bye. Listening. Chad and I have discussed this off air, so we'll bring it to you on air, Godfrey.
Yes, sir.
We feel like we understand what Pruitt was trying to convey whenever he gave the 100%
trying
answer.
To say things are much better today than they were four games into a year ago from a program standpoint.
Behind the scenes.
You can't use 100 times better, obviously.
We haven't seen...
Went over the top with that statement.
I think what he's now able to turn to some freshmen that he's brought in.
Okay.
And start that process, as opposed to maybe a year ago where the guys he's turning to are checking out, which is what happened at the end of last year. Now, whether or not you believe that, I think that was what he's trying to say. Now, what he ended up saying sounds ridiculous.
I think he tried to run some dudes off last year, which has been proven now in the short cycle, early signing, grad transfer, and just this modern culture of coaching where you only get like a year and a half now before people want to create a referendum on you. You can't run anybody off unless it's a criminal issue. I'm serious. Like, you just can't do...
Well, he didn't run many guys off last year. Even if he tried, he kept most of the guys.
Well, no. I'm talking about this whole, like, these guys are quitting on me, that kind of stuff. If I'm not saying it's fair, right, or easy. It's definitely not easy from the coaches I talk to. You got to go in and win hearts and minds day one, because players now are assuming more power than they ever have in college football. It's still grossly disproportionate.
Yeah.
My thing with Pruitt is this, because I think Chad's interpretation is spot on. What he's trying to say is this program is in a better place wholesale, but it's a lot like the iceberg. It's like the caller had a great point. I'm only looking at Tennessee for those 60 football minutes a Saturday, right? So if Pruitt is going to... hunker down, right? And right. We're not going to hear anything about what's going on whatsoever. There's very little access given. He shut the media out completely in Knoxville for about a year, right? And not like they really opened the door since then. You can't come out and tell us about how great things are for something we can't see. We don't buy that. That's not how it works anymore.
Well, especially after we heard all offseason how great Garantano was having an offseason and where he was going to have a year where he was going to play so well, we may see him enter the NFL draft.
Of course.
You know what's so weird about all this, too? I got the sense last year, starting with that spring game, when he said guys are out there quitting in the spring, in his first spring game, if you remember. We don't know how to compete. Guys are quitting. We need more fans here at the spring game, yada, yada,
I remember
yada.
That, yeah.
I got the sense that he hated being in Knoxville. He hated the fans' mentality. He hated a lot of his team. What's odd about this year is I get the sense he loves this team, the way he talks about them. He talks glowingly about their effort and their willingness to learn and how hard they try and how hard they practice, yet the results aren't there. So going back to your iceberg reference and what you see and what you don't see, it's like he's trying to tell everyone, guys, if you saw the meeting room, if you saw the participation for workouts or study hall, if you saw what I saw with these guys, you would understand things are better, but yet we're not seeing it. So here's my question.
Okay.
If, in fact, they are 100 times better, let's say they're 10 times better, let's say they're just a little bit better than a year ago, won't we see that against South Carolina and Kentucky and Vandy and UAB later in the year? Because that's where they lost a lot of people last year.
Yes.
They had a chance to get to a bowl game, and they fell on their face against Missouri and Vandy at the end of the year, and they looked terrible. So if it's getting better, if we're going to see something at some point, shouldn't we start to see some level of payoff where they're looking a lot better and winning some of those games in the last month?
UAB, Kentucky, Carolina, Vanderbilt, Mizzou. Yes. However, let me point this out. You know what we're actually seeing here is a man learning to be a head coach. Okay.
Yes.
This is
There's no doubt about that. Not a fully formed product when he took the job.
Not at all. And this is why the trend was sharply in the other direction. Really, it still is, unless you're Alabama's defensive coordinator. Then apparently God comes down and touches your forehead and you're ready to coach in the SEC, except it's never worked. Ever.
Except for Kirby Smart.
TBD, because, hey, I'm just telling you, down in the Pines, until he actually wins it. Well, look, I'm from Georgia. We're cursed. The whole thing is on Native American reservation. The whole state, okay? Until Georgia wins in the playoff, it has not worked, okay? So Kirby's the best example so far. But think about all the Alabama staffers that have been hired. You got me on the Alabama rant for a second. Let me back up. Head coaches are supposed to be groomed in a 130-odd team FBS from smaller places, and they learn team psychology, and they learn how to evaluate the entire program from your trainers to your coaches to your meeting rooms, all these things that Pruitt sounds to me like someone who's sort of discovering, oh man, like I'm in charge and the tone that I set actually has a ripple effect. It's like he's discovering this as he is in the second year of being the head coach for the first time. The problem is it's in the SEC and not the Sun Belt.
But what does it tell you about the tone he's trying to set that he's being overwhelmingly positive in the face of nothing but negative?
I'll tell you why.
Right? Like, that's his forward-facing position after every game. Hey, we're a couple turnovers away from winning this game. Hey, our guys are trying hard. I love this team. I love their effort. Even the upperclassmen. I mean, that's, to me, that's not a bad angle to take with a group of guys who have been beaten down.
Sounds a lot like Butch Jones to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Butch Jones was doing that in year 4 or 5.
Correct.
Things were going bad.
That's fine.
That's the difference.
But here's the contrast.
With guys who had won some games before that.
In year one, he's telling everybody they suck. The players, the program, the state, and the fans. He's figured out that you can't dumb football ball coach your way into success culturally. It's not real. It's not
that's
a thing.
That's maybe the one area where he's learned on the job and he's actually applying it.
And I think there's probably more, but again, we don't see those.
That's the one that we see.
Because the dude is extremely paranoid and comes from the Saban school of, if you aren't Pravda, if you aren't state media, you're not getting behind this wall. And this is why you have to invite objective individuals into your program. I'm not angling for an all-access piece. I'd rather run my head into a wall than deal with that right now. But they need to communicate this stuff in the offseason, because guess what? You're not Bama. You're Tennessee.
Smyrna, 104.5 FM. Franklin, 104.5 FM. Murfreesboro, 104.5 FM. No matter where you listen in Middle Tennessee, you'll always find us on one frequency. 104.5 The Zone.
Hit the phones for Stephen Godfrey, who's in studio with us. Keith Bullock is coming up at 1 p.m. We go to Philip. Philip, thanks for waiting.
Hey, guys. You guys, I don't know if you guys had a chance to read the piece in The Athletic by David Ubbin on Jaquez Jones leaving. But what he, in my opinion, didn't say kind of tells more about what's going on up there than anything. Obviously, Pruitt, when I think he's saying 100 times better, I think he's talking his players, not the roster, but the players he's recruited is 100 times better. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I agree, but Godfrey, we talked about this. That's what he has to sell right now.
Yeah.
Whether that's reality or not, what else are you selling?
It's hard to do that,
though. It looks like a good recruiting class. Yeah. I mean, early returns are good for guys who are 18 and playing a lot of snaps, but you've got to keep building on that.
How many bodies are we talking about here? 40? 50 guys? That's not going to win you football games right now.
No. No.
This is what I keep saying. I think the caller's correct. I think we're correct in that obviously he's trying to create a shift in that locker room based on guys that he goes and evaluates. Because I know for a fact they brought in that Alabama evaluation system, which is going to be completely unlike anything that Butch's staff would have done. Although you'll see wherever Butch goes next, you'll see him do the same thing because he's at Bama now. I think that's a big issue for Pruitt. But again, you can't win SEC football games and go to bowls with 50-some-odd players that you trust.
What you have to do is all those sophomores that are playing right now, or redshirt sophomores or redshirt freshmen, combined with all the freshmen that are playing, it's one thing to lose Will Ignatz and Shannon Reed and Jaquez Jones, guys who probably aren't going to play that much this season, moving forward anyways. It's another thing to lose a Quavarius Crouch or a Henry To'o, or one of these freshmen that look to be pretty good, Roman Harrison, talking about the evaluation tools they use.
Yeah.
That's a guy from South Georgia that no one was on until Tennessee found him. You got to keep those guys engaged. You got to lead with them now moving forward. And that's all. I'm not saying he can do it or that he can sell it. That's what you got to sell right now if you're Jeremy Pruitt, right?
Sell to who?
Sell to recruits.
Okay.
For next year. I'm saying you've got to go into a living room and basically say, look, we're not good right now.
Right.
We acknowledge that. We're going to get a lot better. It's going to start in 2020 because those freshmen are going to be sophomores. You're going to play. You're going to have a chance to play. It's just going to get better and better. The sophomores that played a year ago are going to be juniors. That's what you have to try to sell.
I don't know if this is going to make Tennessee fans mad or what, but the more this goes on, the more it reminds me of Ed Orgeron, Ole Miss head coach, and not Ed Orgeron, LSU head coach. This is a guy who was plucked for his recruiting prowess because he was a rah-rah ball coach guy. He was an energy guy. He had absolutely no no media training, unrefined as they come. That's another issue about coming from Alabama, I might add. You have absolutely no idea how to handle public-facing situations because Saban keeps you behind a wall right now. We have not heard from Pete Golding, the defensive coordinator at Alabama. We won't. We didn't hear from Kirby until he took the Georgia job. By the way, my Twitter was blowing up in the break. I will acquiesce and say that Kirby has done a great job at Georgia. I will continue to reassert as a Georgian, there is one metric by which they judge success at UGA after the Mark Richt era, and he has not given them a title yet. So I don't think he's a bad coach.
Mangrum is next. What's up, Mangrum?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, Withrow, just want to congratulate you and Angie, man, bringing one into the house there.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Hey, a couple things. Godfrey and Chad, I know you're a big UT guy. How many freshmen do we have starting right now?
Well, God. There are 16 that played meaningful snaps against Florida. Starting, I want to say there's probably 5 or 6. That's starting.
Wow. Okay. And did I hear Juwan Jennings was taking snaps at practice this week?
Yeah, he took some snaps. Now, they're saying that's sort of a fun/experiment that they may mix in during games. I don't think he's going to be the starting quarterback. If Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt are having to sell one thing, what's Chad Moore selling right now at Arkansas?
I'm not supposed to give long pauses on radio. I don't.
I think the long pause is great for effect.
Chad, I don't know what's going on.
Is it the Dub Club?
Buddy.
That was a tough time to unveil the Dub Club.
Oh, guys, what is going on? I'm asking objectively because it's gonna get worse too. It really is at Arkansas. I don't know.
Hey, Harbaugh in Michigan. What area of their lack of performance in big games is most surprising?
Offense right now, everybody, it's amazing how the fealty that they show to Harbaugh. We make jokes because of Chad's familial stretch into Nebraska about one Scott Frost. Boy, they sure will rally around. I see some otherwise allegedly educated human beings say some incredibly dumb things about in favor of Jim Harbaugh after
really
some of these losses.
Amazing. Yeah.
What's going on here? Well, except most of them work in the media and most of them went to Michigan. I'll stop there before I start swearing.
Adam Schefter.
All of them. Every one of them. It's just, look, Gaddis was a proven commodity. I mean, you ask around in college football, there's clearly, again, what did we say in the last segment about I'm looking at comparative analytics here, and if you're not working with all your OCs, is this you or is it the OCs? I'm just asking, all right? They were not prepared at all to run that offense this year. That is abundantly clear. And also, Patterson was never consistent at Ole Miss. But when he went to Michigan, he was, you know, escaping the tyranny of Hugh Freeze and all that NCAA stuff. But the bottom line was, kid was never consistent to begin with.
And they don't have Winovich and Bush and that crew.
Lost a lot of guys.
Gary.
Also, Wisconsin puts 14 offensive linemen on the field and runs the most erotic offense in football.
Wisconsin looked like they had the better athletes on the field. That was what's surprising to me.
Jonathan Taylor's as good a athlete running back as there is in the country.
They are.
It's amazing that formula. Just get a bunch of big Midwestern, physical, mean, tough linemen.
You mean Nebraska in 1990?
Yes, and you get one dynamic running back that gets all the carries.
I feel like every
and
time
you put that running back behind that line with great vision, and good things happen.
Like every time I come on, we're like poking fun at Nebraska. Is there a Nebraska listener that is going to hear this, or are we just doing this for our own?
There is
amusement?
a Husker Watchers Club.
Okay. Well,
Nashville.
I don't mean to say that necessarily, but bottom line is this: where do you think Barry Alvarez got that formula from? Tom Osborne. That's it, man. It's working though. It's amazing that it works so well.
You are headed to Texas this weekend for
next weekend. Well, yeah, no, actually Sunday. Thank you. Yeah.
This weekend, and you'll have a long form piece coming up there. So we look forward to it, man. Thank you, Goffrey.
Thank you as always.